Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co. LLC, used with permission.
Today on The Grave Talks, Abandoned Graves. A conversation with Becca and Lynn Thomas. Graves, cemeteries, places where the dead lie. These locations are rife with bodies. Do the souls of those who passed still linger near the physical remains of those bodies? Today we discuss this theory and the evidence behind it as we discuss haunted graves with Becca Thomas and Lynn Thomas on The Grave Talks.
For me, it started a couple experiences as a child, and my mom and I always enjoyed cemeteries. She'd bring me there and we'd walk around, and we'd always watch ghost hunter shows together. And when we were in a cemetery one night, she was recording, and when we got home, we listened to it and we caught an EVP that was so clear. We never heard anything while we were there, but it was like somebody was right there, you know, saying it right to us. And from that point on, I was just kind of hooked.
How about your team member there? And what's your team member's name? Who's with us?
Hi, my name's Lynn.
Hey, Lynn. How about for you? What was it for you that really kind of got you interested in the world of the paranormal?
Well, mine started as a child as well. Me and one of my sisters used to have a lot of experiences in the home that we grew up in. And as I grew up, just living in different places, things happening, you know, you just tend to think not every place can be haunted, so it must be something with you. Mm-hmm. You know, and it kind of took off from there, and it started out as just like a fun hobby, you know, and now we just really, really love it.
Tell me about some of those experiences in the home that you grew up in that you could identify as, you know, this is off. What were some of those? What were the events like?
Well, I can remember being 5 and my other sister at the time was 6, mm-hmm. and we'd see, it was to us, it looked like 2 trolls that would come out of our closet. We had seen a big, tall shadow figure, man, like about 7 feet tall. Lights going on and off. Just really, really scared in that home and not really understanding why, of course, because you're little, you know, and it wasn't talked about in my home. You know, and to this day, my mom still lives there where we were raised. I won't go into her home if she's not home. Like, if I go to visit and her car's not there, I wait in my car until my mom gets home.
What does your mom say about that? What is her mindset on these experiences that you had?
She's not really a believer, and we never really talk about it. It was just one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Was she ever present for any of the experiences, but is kind of in that, in a denial state that some people have? They're going to always have some sort of reason for whatever happened that wasn't what it was.
Well, like with the troll things, obviously she was home because we'd be in bed asleep,
sure.
You know, so she would be home, but really we just never really talked about it. It wasn't something that was talked about in my home. My mom was very Irish Catholic, and you know, it's just something we didn't discuss.
Sure. I can understand that. Becca, for you, what was the environment in terms of growing up and the idea or the acceptance of the world of ghosts and paranormal? Was it something that was discussed? Was it part of your life between you and your parents in terms of conversation? Or was it in that same sort of aspect that Lynn kind of went through?
Oh, it was the totally opposite end of the spectrum. My mom was completely into it, and she always explained, you know, there is the life after death. There are spirits, you know, not to be really necessarily afraid of them, but to be, you know, wary and be aware of what you're doing if you're trying to contact. And she just kind of talked me through it with her own opinion, and that's kind of where my idea of it came from.
So tell me more about the EVP that you caught on that moment where you really kind of sparked everything for you. Tell me about the experience, where you were, why you were there, and what exactly did you capture in that EVP?
So, I mean, we've caught quite a few, but I think the one big one that really stands out was this summer we were in a cemetery out in Otisfield, Maine, and we had just got out of the car, literally had the video going maybe 10 seconds, and we're walking down by these stones, and something comes through and says, "Howard," clear as day. And then I start looking around, and right next to me, maybe a couple feet back from where I just walked by, was a military service headstone, and his name was Howard.
Wow.
It was very strange.
So you did you do any more investigating as to who this Howard was, or do any more digging and into that name? Were you able to find anything?
I wasn't really able to find a whole lot, except his wife is still alive, so this man hasn't been deceased all that long. Mm-hmm. Another thing we got in that cemetery, probably just 10 minutes later, was it was a, like I said, a summer day, and there was no wind, and we're walking back around in the same area, and there were two pinwheels, probably a couple feet apart from each other. One pinwheel was spinning really quickly, while the one next to it was dead still. And as soon as we walk over to it, and we have this on video, the one spinning completely stops. We asked in another video a few minutes after that if they could make it happen again, and it started spinning again, but very slowly.
And I'm assuming there wasn't much of a breeze or anything like that. Obviously, a pinwheel can get stuck, and even if you have a strong breeze, it's not going to move. But I'm assuming you could walk up to it, and then it can move, and there wasn't anything there that you determined wasn't influencing.
Right. Yep. In the video where we first noticed it, I actually panned over to the tree to show that the leaves were dead still. There was no movement, no rustling, nothing.
So when it comes to locations that have hauntings, let's talk about graveyards. Obviously, you had that EVP experience there, one of the more profound moments for you. There's obviously a lot of places one can investigate, a lot of places where ghosts can be. Graveyards themselves, it's an area that, you know, some would argue and say, because this is a place that many in life don't visit all that often, other than folks like ourselves. But in terms of the normal folks out there who aren't obsessed with these topics, you know, they go and see a loved one every now and then, but it's not a normal, you know, every week path that they're going down. Others would argue that there's all the dead that are there. But what's your thought on that? Are graveyards a location that are more apt to have hauntings in because of all the bodies that lay there, because of the emotional energy that's expelled there when a family lays their dead to rest? What are your thoughts on graveyards as a location being a very hot spot for activity?
In general, I personally believe anywhere can be haunted, but graveyards specifically, in my opinion, that's where their body, I mean, that's their body. They were living in it their whole life. Probably a lot of those emotions, like you said, when they lay their family member to rest plays part of it. But I think the biggest part is if we were just going there to visit a stone, obviously we wouldn't catch anything. But if we're there with equipment and a spirit box and asking to communicate, I feel like it's like it attracts them, like they mm-hmm. can get their message through.
So the intent, in your opinion, plays a big role in them actually coming out versus just kind of being there.
I believe so.
Lynn, what's your thoughts?
I pretty much feel the same way. I know all our EVPs, or 99% of them, is from cemeteries. Hmm. I feel it's the spirit box more, like just giving spirits anywhere the capability of coming through and being heard. I don't know if it's so much that the spirits are hanging out in the graveyard.
Because that's an interesting question that we kind of look at with the spirits is, are they sitting there? Are they attached to the body? Is there a perimeter in which they don't go beyond where their body lays in rest? Or are they just able to kind of be summoned back when they sense there's a platform them that a platform for them that they can that's use to I communicate?
Feel. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I feel.
I was going to say, where in theory you could go to the house that they resided in or a place that they loved, a place that they spent a lot of time in with that same spirit box, albeit right. 30 miles away. You could still right. summon that same spirit in a different geographic location. They're not necessarily just stuck in that area.
Right. Like, we went to a cemetery just down the street from my house this past summer. Well, no, in the spring.
Yeah.
And I had a friend. He had passed away like 5 days prior to us going there. Now, he didn't live in this town, the cemetery. And it was my first time in that cemetery of my name being yelled by a man, and it sounds just like him. So that's why I think the spirit box just helps spirits come through, because, you know, he's not in that cemetery buried.
Mm-hmm. So. With the spirit box and it pulling words and things of that nature, how do you explain where does this come from, where you can get the literal tone of the voice of someone who is deceased coming through the box and not just a random voice that's popping up through scanning of dials or things of that nature?
I really don't know how to answer that. I don't know. Maybe it's because I was missing him and I thought, you know, to me, it sounds like him. Mm-hmm. But when I look back on videos of his voice, it sounds just like it to me.
It does. I heard it too.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, when you know the person, you just know who it is, even more than just audibly. Sometimes there's just that sense there. Let's talk about, obviously, you said you get a lot of your material from graveyards. A lot of things that you find are there. Is there anything about specific types of graveyards or settings of graveyards that tend to produce more evidence than others when you're out there looking?
In the beginning, we kind of would lean towards older ones, but we were pretty surprised when we caught some decent EVPs in newer ones. So I can't honestly say for sure if there's something specific about them. Mm-hmm. I think it's really hit or miss.
Yeah. Is it something, do you think the way in which an individual is buried has anything to do with the probability of getting evidence, meaning 6 feet into the ground, meaning in a mausoleum type setting or other setting that may possibly increase the odds of activity?
I mean, maybe it could. I haven't really thought a whole lot on that. I do feel like cemeteries that are by water tend to have a little more activity here and there. Mm-hmm. Also, I do think how they died could possibly play a role in their activity after death. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk more about your investigations, whether it be graveyards or other locations. What are some of the, you know, the biggest ones that you look back on and you go, that was really amazing. I don't know that I could ever replicate that again. I'll throw it to you, Becca.
Okay. For me, I think the biggest one that comes back to me is when we were out in Otis Field again at a cemetery. And it was the first one we hit that night. The second I walked in there, my body started shaking almost uncontrollably. My team member, Lynn, looked at me and she's like, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, you know, it wasn't really all that cold out. There was no other reason for me to start shaking." I was taking photos all around, like a 360 view of the cemetery. When we left that cemetery, the shaking completely stopped. It did not happen again the rest of the night at any other location. When I got home, that's the place we caught what appears to be a full-figured apparition on the opposite side of the cemetery wall. And I sent it out to another investigator. And he sent it back to me with filters. And he's like, "Look, what you caught is not a solid figure, but you can see the legs. You can see half of the upper torso. It's pretty clear."
What was your reaction when you captured this? Did you see it through the lens of the camera? Would you see it after it was already captured? Did you see it with your own eyes?
No, I did not. I've never actually seen something that I've caught with my own eyes. It's always after I get back and I'm going through my photos or videos.
Mm-hmm. What was your reaction when you saw that?
I was absolutely floored. I texted Lynn. She was driving home. I was freaking out, like, you need to pull over right now. Mm-hmm. What do you see?
Sure. And is there any, I mean, were you able to do any assumptions or any sort of research into who or what this might have been that you captured there?
I did try, because I got so excited. I sent the evidence to the Otis Field Historical Society, and I asked if they had any history I could look into on Native Americans, because numerous people said it looked like a Native American, and they said, well, not really, but that whole area is basically all the same family, and there's just a strange lineage to it about family members having children with some, not their own family members, obviously, but, you know, just the way it went about was just strange.
Yeah. And having an experience like that, Lynn, how about you? What's give me one of your experiences that really stands out.
Mine wasn't in a graveyard. We were at a private residence, and we had been investigating, and towards the end of it, I started feeling like I was aspirating. I was choking and I couldn't breathe and I couldn't stop. Like, well, I wasn't like not breathing. I was coughing and choking and stuff and couldn't catch my breath.
Mm-hmm.
And had to go outside. And, you know, then I was fine once I was outside. And when I was driving home from that place, a crow hit my car. And I love crows. They're my favorite birds.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got home, I had been home about an hour, and then a bird hit my living room window. And, you know, I know all that doesn't really mean anything separately, but it was just strange, the timing of it all, you know?
Well, sure. I mean, it seems fairly ominous, and crows, you know, I can't say a lot of us just randomly hit crows on a regular basis, you know?
Right. And the folks' house we were at, since they've moved in there, she's had one heart attack and he's had two.
I think it, yeah.
Yeah, they started having a lot of health issues and stuff. So it was creepy to me, and it's not a place I want to go back. You know, she wants help and needs help, but I won't be going back.
When you had those experiences, and it's like literally right after you were there and you have the experiences, almost omen-like things of crows, what's going through your mind as you're going home?
That somebody I love is probably going to die.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, is what was going through my mind, you know, because my husband had gone through a cardiac arrest a few months prior to that. So there was just still a lot on my mind. Mm-hmm. And I was really nervous about things. And I mean, my husband survived, thank God. But, you know, sure. I was just worried about stuff.
Do you believe in omens and things of that nature, where it's something was, you know, controlling that bird, or just the fact that
I do.
That the universe connected you with the bird that way?
Yeah, it's weird, but I do. Yes. Very superstitious.
Are there specific meanings? And this is all opinion based, so just tell me what your feelings are. Do you believe there's specific meanings behind things like the bird, and the type of bird that it is, being a crow, being what it is? Are there, you know, not being a robin or a cardinal that you hit, is there something to that it was crows and just in such a weird moment for those events to be unfolding?
Yeah, It just was an unsettling feeling for me being at that home.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so like when the bird hit my windshield and then the bird hit my window at home, you know, and I called Becker all upset. I just felt like it was just bad, but I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. Was there any fear that something had attached to you, or that you were bringing something back home with you from that investigation?
Yeah, there was, but it didn't take me long to figure out that nothing had followed me home and nothing bad had happened, thank God. So it was just, you know, being all, I don't know, worked up in the heat of the moment of things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was afraid something would follow me home from there.
Becca, how about
and you? I just,
go ahead.
Whoops. I just have, I don't know, my gut just tells me not to go back to that home. That's no place I want to go back to investigate.
And I want to talk more about that home in just a moment. But Becca, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on omens and things of that nature, signs, you know, like what Lynn experienced?
I do think there is some, you know, credit to it. Like you were saying, the type of bird and the timing of the bird, it's all very strange considering what has been experienced in that home. Mm-hmm. I can't help but wonder if she had gone home that same time, same route, and not gone to that house, would that have still happened? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It certainly leaves one to wonder. Do you ever fear on investigations, or have you ever had an experience where you felt like something had followed you back home or wherever your destination was after the investigation was over?
No, not myself. I have not.
Is it something you are concerned about? Is it something that crosses your mind?
I mean, yeah, of course it crosses my mind, but I like to try to stay in a positive mindset because I feel like if you get yourself worked up and you get in your own head, I feel like that makes you more likely to have something attached to you. And anytime we go in anywhere, we always introduce ourselves. We say what we're there for. We try to set strong boundaries of you are not to follow us home. You know, we're just here to talk. And we always stay extremely respectful while we're there. You know, if we even go to the length of picking up trash or straightening up, you know, flowers or decorations that have been knocked down, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
And when exercising those ideas and principles of, you know, you're not to follow me home, things like that, if you're dealing with something that's not malevolent, something that doesn't have a negative attitude or outlook or it's just, it's there. It doesn't want to follow you home to begin with. It just wants to be there or communicate or whatnot, or just be left alone. And they do want to stay there. But what is really stopping something if it's not that type of spirit? If it is something that really doesn't have, you know, the boundaries or doesn't want to play by the rules, an investigator going in and simply saying, you're not allowed to follow me home, does that really hold any weight if they have other ideas?
Oh, no, probably not. And I think a big reason we do say that is for our own peace of mind while we're there. You know, mm-hmm. It obviously makes us feel better. But if something truly wanted to follow me home, I'm sure there's no reason why it wouldn't.
Sure.
We have a EVP on our page where we were in a cemetery and a woman says very clearly that she followed us there. She goes, I followed you here. So who knows where we picked her up from or why she followed us there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it seems to really kind of go back to intent. Like you were saying earlier, kind of being in the mindset, you know, almost like the self-fulfilling prophecy. If you know, you keep fearing this happening and you prepare and prepare and prepare for something to happen. Eventually, sometimes you almost will those around you, if we're talking dealing with humans, to also kind of get cautious. What are they preparing for? What is this? You know, and then it ends up happening because you got a direct response, you know, in the same level of energy that one was, you know, fearing. So just having that mindset, and sometimes it may seem silly, I guess, of, you know, let's say these words out loud. Let's do this or do that. But a lot of it is not even so much for the dead. It's more so for the living. Is that what you would agree with?
Absolutely.
And to keep your mindset in a certain place. I want to go back, Lynn, to that house that you said it was just really dark and the illnesses that then came over the family. What more did you hear from them? I know you didn't go back, but what more did you hear from them after you had left? And what did you express to them about your concerns about the location?
I haven't really heard much from them as far as going back or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, seeing some stuff on Facebook with mutual friends, you know, I know about their health and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like when we were there, there was headstones in their shed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where those headstones came from. I guess when they moved there, they were there when they bought the place. And I don't know. Maybe she's reached out a couple times wanting help, but Becca redirects her to other people that could help her better, because I know nothing about demons or bad stuff like that. So there's just really nothing we can help her with, but I just have no desire to go back. It was a very uncomfortable feeling being there right from the get-go.
Do you believe that the dead or demons or whatever it may be can influence the health of the living? As these people obviously then had some health concerns afterwards. Do you connect that directly to the haunting experience that's going on in their property?
I do. I mean, they're young for heart attacks.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They're young for the health issues they're having. I'm not saying it's not possible to have all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just believe it's related to what's going on where they live.
What does someone do? I mean, I know you say you don't necessarily deal in the darker end of things, and I understand and respect that. But what do you say to someone other than go talk to this person, you know, who comes to you that is truly, you know, they're wanting some sort of an answer. They're wanting some sort of direction right now as to what to do. Whether or not you're going to set foot through their door or not is a whole other thing. But just someone reaching out saying, I know you investigate. I know you have some knowledge in this world. And you're kind of getting the vibe that it's something like that, like what you just experienced. And they're wanting some sort of assistance, but it's going to take time for it to get there. How does someone deal with something like that that's going on in an interim situation before someone can come in and try and give help?
Well, that's typically something that I would handle with them, and I try to support them as much as possible. And other than, you know, pointing them in the right direction, I tell them to try to, you know, I guess just take your home back and stay positive. Try not to fear it, you know, sage if you can, you know, use the salts and everything around your door, do all that stuff. I just try to, you know, be there and listen for them, because a lot of times they just need to get it out. I mean, keeping it in isn't going to help at all.
When it comes to that, when it comes to saging, salting, things of that nature, are there certain practices that work better in certain situations?
Probably. I don't know really where to go with that one.
Well, for me, in my house, I like the burning of the sage.
Oh, so
the cleansing, stuff like that. You know, the stones, the salt.
I usually tell people if you feel there's a negative presence there, you know, try to burn some Palo Santo wood first and then follow up with some sage and whatnot. And, you know, just the basic things.
When it comes to intent, and we're talking about things like the Palo Santo wood, sage, all of that, obviously that is being done with intent. And when we're talking about intent with ridding a home of a spirit or trying to calm things down with them, why, this is just an opinion question, why is it that we tend to go to things like sage and things of that nature? Could it, in theory, could you essentially burn basil if you wanted to, if you had the same intent behind the action that you're doing?
Absolutely. And we touched on this on the last podcast. I fully believe it's more of what you're going for, and like you said, your intent, rather than what you have to use.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. That, it's just interesting to me. So if someone doesn't have access to those sort of materials, they could essentially use other things, or does a ritualistic event have to take place? Can it be more just willing and talking and walking around saying certain things and willing intent out into the atmosphere?
Yeah, I do believe you can do that. I think you can try to rid negative energy with all kinds of different ways. It's just
right down to even just praying, if that's what you prefer.
Right, whatever you're more comfortable with.
Has there ever been an investigation that, I know, Lynn, you just said you didn't want to go back to that home after kind of feeling what you felt, and you felt it was, you know, kind of to a level that you weren't comfortable with dealing with. Becca, have you ever had a situation where you did an investigation or began to learn about one that someone had reached out to you on and you had to say, this seems interesting, but I don't think I'm capable of diving into it with what you're expressing to me is what's happening?
Yeah, it's not often, but the one that did happen with was the same house that Lynn had, because I was feeling okay at first until I directed the homeowner to another paranormal team that specializes in more negative things. Mm-hmm. And when they started throwing the word demonic around, I was pretty much like, I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah, because we went there pretty much just to confirm for, or try to confirm for them if they had activity, you know, by catching things. Mm-hmm. But the moment I set foot in their house, it wasn't on their property, where in the shed where we found the headstones or anything, you know, and they had said they felt uncomfortable out in a certain area, but it wasn't for me like that outside. It was the moment we came into their house and we started doing our investigating. I just, yeah. That's
what that did you, what was the response? I'm assuming you had to have at some point say, why do you have headstones in your shed? How did that conversation go?
She told us she wasn't sure, and they were in there when she bought the house, and she'd like to, you know, try to find where they came from and lay them to rest, because I told her that was probably her best bet, was, you know, kind of give them a little service, lay them to rest so they don't feel so, you know, not at peace. But mm-hmm. It made her very nervous. She won't even go near that shed. She won't step foot in that shed.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Becca and Lynn Thomas. In part two of our conversation, when Becca and Lynn discovered headstones in a woman's shed, how did they explain it, or how did the owner explain it to them? What are some of the most bizarre places they found unmarked gravesites? What sort of evidence has Becca and Lynn caught that they thought was ghostly but turned out to be non-paranormal? What are Becca and Lynn's opinions on orbs and how legitimate they are when they are captured? All of that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a Gravekeeper. For $5 a month, you get access to part two of this conversation and all of our conversations, hundreds of them, you can binge away on right now, including advanced episodes of the show released to you before anybody else, all commercial free. Check it out, patreon.com/thegravetalks. And thank you for your support in advance. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.